Willkommen, welcome. This session is about cool new feature of PowerShell called Just Enough Administration, or JIA. The name of that feature or the acronym sounds much better in German. Yeah, right. JIA, not so much. My name is Alexander Nikolic. I'm a PowerShell MVP. I'm also owner of Mozak IT Consulting, and I'm a co-founder of PowerShellMagazine.com. If you're interested in PowerShell, probably you are aware of the existence of that site. I'm also community manager of PowerShell.com, community portal for with a lot of forums to help PowerShell users. And you can find me on Twitter as Alexander. As we all know, admins are attack surface. How many of you have users in your company that have local admin rights on their desktop machines? Can I see some hands? Just a few, that's good. You know how bad it is, right? Because bad users, external, and also important, internal, are after your high privilege account credentials. So what happens when your help desk guy connect to a desktop machine when user has local admin rights? If that guy has a local admin rights, he can install some software to fetch the credentials from memory, for example. Suddenly, he has access to everything as the help desk engineer has. Very easy. Doesn't have to do much. Tools are already there, in the open, available. You will see that a little bit later. So what do we want? We want people to don't have the admin privileges to do their job, okay? In case that machine got cracked, then it wouldn't leak the high value credentials. Or to correct myself, when machine got cracked, not if. We need to assume a breach. This is the situation in the modern IT world. You always need to think that breach is already inside of your network, okay? We want people to do only what they needed to do, not more than that. And we also want to log all their actions so that later, if something bad happens, we can do some forensics and find a clue what really happened on machines. One of the main goals here is to reduce the risk. We cannot remove the risk, but we can significantly reduce the risk if you use a proper techniques, if we leverage some of the features of PowerShell. So the idea here is to incrementally reduce that exposure of admin accounts or the other accounts with the high privileges. We cannot do that probably in your, you cannot do it in your environment immediately, but can you can start to reduce the thing. The first thing is that we need to lower the number of people with admin privileges, right? Because if someone needs to just restart a service on some server and nothing else, we can do something so that person can practically do that stuff without being admin on that machine. The JIA is all about that, to allow users, without giving them actual admin rights, to perform some actions to do their job. We want to reduce the impact of admin privileges. So even if they do some actions, those actions can be executed on a, with a local admin privileges on the machines without giving them domain rights so that they can move around with those privileges. And we want to reduce the number of actions that they can perform. At the same time, we want to log everything that is possible. It's very important to log all this stuff. And PowerShell 5 brings that to us, they really did a great job enabling a lot of logging capabilities now with the transactions in the PowerShell console, in the PowerShell ISC. Also, event logs can log a lot of much more than before. And you will see that in the future that we will really benefit from for all that. Do we have a solution for this kind of problem? We have a solution, and a solution is not really that new. The way how we will implement it, it's new. The solution is based on a PowerShell remoting security features that are available in Exchange Online for the long time, right? Are there any Exchange admins here? You all know when you connect to your Exchange as admin, you have a different set of commandlets that are exposed to you so that you can do your job, but your user can also connect and get a subset of commandlets so that he can manage some of the actions on his mailbox, right? All of those things are controlled by a role-based access control, and they have first a smaller number of commandlets exposed, and also some parameters on commandlets are removed if they are potentially dangerous or just not needed. Technically, everything that we will talk about is based on session configuration. What is a session configuration? When you use PowerShell remoting and you connect to a remote host, you connect to so-called session configuration or remoting endpoint. By default, only members of the local administrators group can connect, right? What they get by default is access to full PowerShell. The session configuration default one is called Microsoft.PowerShell. All the components that components of session configurations are name, then we have an ACL, which controls who can access that session configuration. Then we can have a startup script, some PowerShell commands that will run during the initialization of that session session connection. And we also have a run as credentials, so that actions that will be performed can be performed in the context of someone else. And that's one of the crucial things for all this. How can we get all the commandlets for working with session configuration? Get command star ps session configuration star, and you will see a list of commands that can help you to work with it. So let's go to a demo, because when we talk about PowerShell, demos are always better than the PowerShell, than the PowerPoint. So what I have here for a demo environment is I have a small domain in built-in Azure with a domain controller and two member servers. So everything that I will perform remotely, targeting Azure VMs. So there are a few steps here that are special when you work with Azure VMs. How many of you are users of Azure and have experience with Azure Infrastructure Services? Just two. Okay. So I already performed some of these actions, but I will give you a brief introduction. What I'm really doing here is that I need to get information about the URL that I can use for a connection. And for that, I have a commandlet that is part of Azure PowerShell module for getting that. So I don't need to go to a GUI to find out how to connect. I can leverage that later. If you create a VM in a classic Azure portal, then the PowerShell remoting is enabled, but over HTTPS. And they use the self-signed certificate for that. So I can download that certificate to my local certification store, or I can use session option and just skip some checking so that I will not get warnings for connecting to machine that it's with a self-signed certificate. Here I have already stored my credentials encrypted on a file system, and I'm reading them from that file because I don't want all the time to retype my credentials for you. Potentially I will make a mistake, but that's better for me during the testing purposes to just store it there. When I have all those components, I can create a session using new PS session. And just to check if I already have this session, yes, I have it and it's open. So let's move here. What do I see here is that configuration name is Microsoft.PowerShell. That's that default session configuration that we use for default PowerShell remoting connection to our remote system. How PowerShell knows that that's that should be default one? There is a variable called PS session configuration name, and it contains this URL. So you see at the end of it, it's Microsoft.PowerShell. So if you, for example, want to force your users to connect to some different session configuration by default, one that you created, then you can change the content of this variable, and without specifying that, they can immediately go to your specific custom session configuration later, just to let you know. With get PS session configuration commandlet, I can get a list of all the different session configurations that I have on this system. If you forget about this CPU killer one that I created for some demos, those three are present on the client operating system. Microsoft PowerShell 32, if you have a 64-bit system, Microsoft PowerShell Workflow, and Microsoft PowerShell. On the server side, you have one more for internal one for server manager works. If you want to check the session configuration that are available on a remote machine, you will probably think that you can use computer name parameter. For it, unfortunately, it's not available. But there is other ways to get to that. And as you can see here, looking at the syntax, configuration name is not present. But we can connect to a remote machine and get session configurations from there, like this. So those are session configurations on my Azure VM. I have a few default ones and a few customized for this presentation. Another way to do it is to you connect WSMan. WSMan provider and WSMan commandlets are there to give you access to WinRAM settings. The cool thing here is that we can connect to WinRAM service and check the settings and change the settings remotely. It's very powerful. You will see that even more used with NanoServer, when the only way to manage NanoServer is remote connection. So if you need to check the status of WinRAM service on it, you will need to use this, because you cannot log in interactively to NanoServer to perform some actions. What I'm doing here, I'm using a feature called splatting. When I define a hash table with parameter names and parameter values, because there is a lot of them, I didn't want to write a very long one-liner for that. You can also see that you can even assign another commandlet to it. So I'm defining parameters. And then I will connect to that Azure VM. Just store the position where I am. And I will go now to WSMan Drive to check the settings on that remote machine. Right now, you can see that I'm connected and I have access to my local machine and also to Azure WinRAM settings. I can browse that. And this terminology is a little bit different here. When we are in a WinRAM, then session configuration equivalent word is a plugin. But you can see that we have much more plugins here than session configurations. Every session configuration is a WinRAM plugin, but not all WinRAM plugins are session configurations. They exist there for some other purposes. But you can see here those that we mentioned before, Microsoft PowerShell, Microsoft PowerShell Workflow, and Microsoft PowerShell 32. And that demo one, EP, that's the one and full demo that I've created. So this is another way to get information about the remote session configurations. And here is another one, just to have that ready when you need it. We can use also get wsman instance commandlet with a syntax that it's kind of similar to a WinRM, but WinRM is deprecated. It will be deprecated in 2016 and potentially remove from it. So try to learn and use PowerShell commandlets instead of WinRM command utility. When we look at all the properties of default PowerShell session configuration, you can see a lot of information here. The things that are important for us are security descriptor SDDL, or permissions here that are human readable. Then you have information about potentially run as user. This one is not used here. And some other information, the name and others. Right? So this is how you investigate and look at your session configuration. This is what we had by default, but you are also allowed to create your own custom endpoints. The important part here is that you can create constrained endpoints. So you can create a session configurations or endpoints that expose only a number of commandlets that you want. And you can access right to specific users for that. And this is where all power comes from, because we have full control on that. We can also use run as credentials. So when someone connects to that session configuration, everything that he executes, executes in the context of an account with higher privileges, but that's completely transparent to a connected user. He's not aware of that. He doesn't need to know the credentials for it, nothing. Everything runs as someone else. And that someone else is someone who has potentially local admin rights, for example. A little bit of a history how we had that feature improved through different PowerShell versions. That feature is introduced in PowerShell 2 when the PowerShell remoting was introduced as well. So we had that for a long time, if you think about it. But in PowerShell 2, the only way to constrain endpoint is to use a startup script. As you can see, you will see a little bit later, the startup script is not that easy. You need to know a little bit of the whole process, how to do it. And it was a kind of a challenge for a lot of people. So there was just a few users even in the world that used that feature broadly. In PowerShell 3, because they realized that it's kind of a hard to create it using a startup script, they added new PS session configuration file commandlet so that we can use a commandlet to create a custom and constrained session configurations. Unfortunately, what we have seen later is that it's okay for some simple scenarios, but if you really wanted something that it's complex and like that you can have a full control, you always need to use a startup script again. That's from my experience. We also get to run as credentials in PowerShell 3. And that was a really important part. And this is kind of connected to all this story is that we got a new group called remote management users. So if you want to give someone access to a session configuration, you don't need to restart a service and make the big changes. You just add that account to that user group, and everything will work for that guy. In PowerShell 4, there were not any significant improvements in this area at all. But in PowerShell 5, we finally got just enough administration. A feature that will make it easier for us to create those constrained endpoints, and not just that, but also it will make deployment of session configurations much easier. Because that was really a challenge before. Even if you were very good with creating startup scripts, if you wanted to push that session configuration to a 10 or 100 of machines, it would be a challenge. You will need to write some custom code to do all that stuff. Now we can use just enough administration and leverage this RStack configuration for deployment. So let me show you a constraint endpoints, how it looked like when we needed to create them with a startup script in PowerShell 2. And I will give you now access to all these components and parts of it so that it can be easier for you to follow what really happens when we start using Jia. Because I will now need to go through all the steps practically in a way manually. So the first thing here is that I will establish interactive connection with admin rights to my Azure VM. You can see that the prompt changed, so I know that I'm now remotely connected. And I will show you now the content of my startup script on that remote machine. This is also a new feature introduced in PowerShell 5, remote editing of files that are on the remote machines. So local editing of remote machines. So I fetched that remote file into a PowerShell IAC. It's marked in a tab as a remote file, and I can look at it, I can change something, and when I press save, it will be saved on remote machine. Fantastic stuff, right? And so easy. You just need to establish interactive connection to it, and then you will act with PsEdit. PsEdit, by the way, is a function that exists only in PowerShell IAC, so you cannot perform this in a PowerShell console. You need to be in a PowerShell IAC. So let's look at the startup script, how it was in PowerShell 2. The whole point here was that the commandlets are having a property called visibility. We can change it. So if we set visibility to private, immediately those commandlets will not be available anymore to your users who connect to the endpoint. So we'll leverage that first for hiding commandlets and functions, everything that is returned by get command. Then we hide all variables as well. There is also a way to clear all the applications. By applications, I mean ipconfig, netshell, all of those. And then we can also clear all the scripts. So we practically try to remove everything and then add some of our content, a public content, a functions that we have created specifically for some group of users that need to perform some actions on a machine, or we can create proxy functions of unknown commandlets, removing some properties, for example, or adding some functionality. But usually, you remove stuff when you create a constraint endpoint. I will not go into much of a detail here, but you can just see that it was not that easy. You needed to really understand how remoting works, how PowerShell works, all the components of that stuff. Also, you can get this startup script and then change only the public portion of it, and it will work because you can use as a template all the part that practically removes functionalities from session configuration. So here, after all that stuff, we go to that public content part. And for demo purposes, I created one module. I put it in a modules folder, in a folder that it's available when you look at the content of $env PS module path. So it's automatically loaded. But I put here explicit loading just so that you can see when I connect to that session configuration what functions are exposed. And then I set the only commandlets that or functions or commands that belong to my module to be public. After all that, I set language mode to no language. This is a crucial point, really, for properly constraining session configuration. When you set a language mode to no language, that means that you will remove all the language components of PowerShell. So they cannot assign something to variables, they cannot perform 1+1, things, they can only run exposed functions and exposed commandments. They can use piping, but they cannot do any of the language and perform any of the language functionalities. Very important stuff. You will see what will happen if you forget to do that and you set it to a full language. Then your session configuration will look like it's constrained, but someone who knows how to hack it can hack it very easily with just one command. So this is a startup script that I will use to build a constrained endpoint. There's also one thing that I will need. So I'm now moving back to my local machine. I don't need that interactive session anymore. This is a helper function that exists on my local machine for setting SDDL string, because I want to automate everything. So I use a file path parameter with invoke command to send my script to remote machine using admin session variable. I will just execute invoke command admin session get command to check if that function is now available on a remote machine, because I will need it. And I will need some local admin credentials on my Azure VM. What I'm doing now here is I'm creating a script block that will be executed remotely to register PS session configuration, practically to create it. So what are the parts of it? We use a register PS session configuration commandlet, define a name, in this case, SCU demo, define the start or path to a startup script that we have just seen in PowerShell ISC. Then I define the SDDL. As you can see here, that I will give access to a non-admin domain user that I've created, non-admin user. But everything that that non-admin user will execute using a local admin credentials on that machine. And I will not restart at this point WinRM service, because that will break my connection. I don't know, have you seen this using scope modifier before? This is how you bring your locally defined variable into a script block for executing on a remote machine, okay? Because local admin credential, cred, was defined locally on my laptop, but I needed to send that variable to remote block. So let's define a remote block first. And then I will use invoke command admin session to execute that remote block. I will get a warning that I'm using a run as feature, which is potentially dangerous, right? Because if I assign some admin rights to that run as, then whatever is executed when you access that session configuration will be executed as local admin. So you need to be aware of that, and PowerShell nicely exposed this warning message so that we can be, again, reminded of that. Now I will restart WinRM to make this session configuration available. Ignore all the errors. The errors will be that I've just lose my connection, which is normal because I restarted WinRM session. And I will now test that new session configuration that I've just created using my non-admin account. To test it, the difference between the previous commands is here that I now need to specify exact session configuration that I created. If I don't do that, it will try to connect to default Microsoft PowerShell one, and that one is not allowed for a connection for a non-admin user, right? So this is how you target a specific session configuration. If everything is right, I should get non-admin session, and then I can interactively connect to it, okay? So this is not, this is just because I said that during the creation and connection to that give me information about what will be exported as a function. I will now create the interactive session. And let's see what's exposed now. You will see here that I have 7 required functions and few of functions that are part of my module. Those 7 are required to support a different ways of connection: interactive connection, implicit remoting, or invoke commands. Exit PS session, get command, get format data, get help, measure object, out default, and select object. Those 7 are always required when you do constraint if you want people to have a good user experience. Because if you, for some example, you remove exit PS session from it, and they establish interactive connection to your constrained session endpoint, how can they leave it? Right? You need to give them access to exit PS session as well, right? So now I can easily execute any of those. And if you remember, I'm connected as a domain non-admin user. For some of these actions, it will be quite challenging to get the output back if I'm just a non-admin user without any local admin rights. But as you remember, I set run as credentials as a local admin. So everything that I'm executing right now is running in the context of a local admin. The non-admin user who is connected is completely unaware of that. But I exposed just a subset of functions, and he can get all the information that he needs for his job. Okay? Sometimes you can just expose one function for it. If you have a user who needs to temporarily, if he needs to restart a certain service, just one service, instead of getting a late night call at 3 a.m. to check some service and do the job for him, you can enable someone else to do that job and to be perfectly sure that that guy can remotely execute just one function, the function that you have created and nothing else. Can you imagine the power of that? You remove everything and just expose something that you want, that you have full control of it. Let me show you now what happens if you don't set no language as a language mode, but set it as a full language. I will create the first connection to my Azure VM again. But this time, I will connect to a full demo. This full is for full language. So I created a session configuration that exposes only 7 required ones, required commands, and but it's set as a full language. So this is all that your user can do. Nothing else. This is unusable, really. But I want to show you this is the most constrained endpoint that you can create when you think about commandlets. But because the language mode is set to full language, see what happens. So just for a check, we have 7 functions exposed. You try to run a get date. I know some people who tried it a lot and they are still single, but it doesn't work here as well, right? It's not exposed. But if you try this, you call operator and you use a script block because that's a part of a full language. It's a part of a PowerShell language. Everything that it's inside of a script block, you can use, you can execute everything in a script block. So what happens now is that I have access now to my get date just because I forgot to set it to no language. Full language is dangerous. If you have a full language, it doesn't matter how many functions you expose by default, you are not constraining it. Okay? There is no constriction if you constrain things if you are having a full language. I can execute whatever I want. I can now get information about all the shares that exist there just to show you that it's full language, right? Do you know how many commandlets I can execute this way? On this machine, 1,356. Not constrained at all. Everything exposed as long as I put it in a script block and then call the script block. Script block is nothing else but just unnamed function, right? And you can put there whatever PowerShell code you want. Pretty scary, right? Now we are coming to Jia. Let's talk first about some concept and components of Jia. I hope that thanks to this preview part of a session, when I show you how it worked before and what are the components when we do that stuff manually, you can understand now these components of Jia in a better way and easier. So what we have here is a Jia toolkit. That's a new term. Jia toolkit is that well-defined set of commands that we want to be exposed in our session configuration, okay? We've seen that before. We needed to use a startup script to do that public part of it. In that public part, we will expose that stuff. Those commands that are exposed, they are here named Jia toolkit. Then we have a Jia endpoint account. That's a special account with local admin privileges, with a randomly created very long password that it's also, thanks to a schedule account that will be created in this process as well, will be resetted in a certain period of time. And as a user, even as a user who creates all this, as admin of Jia, you are not aware of the password. You don't know it. The guys who are connecting to session endpoints, they don't even know that account exists, not even a password. Great stuff, right? Every single Jia endpoint will have a specific Jia endpoint account assigned to it. So if you have, if you create three Jia, using Jia, three endpoints, you will get three local admin accounts, every single one of them with one single purpose to support that Jia endpoint with automatically resetted passwords, very long ones, hard to break, okay? If someone is already on your machine, that machine is already owned, so that person can only get something that is already in his hands. And then we have a Jia endpoint. That's that management connection point that we have seen now that we authorize persons can connect to that endpoint, and they will get access to all commands that belong to a Jia toolkit, and all of those commands will be executed in the context of Jia endpoint account. That's the whole story. The greatest thing here is that we can leverage DSC, Design Static Configuration, to deploy Jia endpoints. Very powerful concept. Extremely good. We can do a push mode for DSC to push configurations, or we can put our configurations on a pull server and then link those target nodes that we want to have Jia endpoints connected to a pull server, and they will pull configurations. When someone changes something, they will be corrected if we set it that way. So that's extremely, extremely powerful mechanism for deployment and for management of that configuration. So let's look now in a demo of Jia. So I will now connect to my other VM that I haven't used so far. With the local admin credentials, because I need to perform some admin. So now I'm not an operator, I'm not the guy who will connect to that constrained endpoint, I'm creating it. And then I will create interactive session. Let me check the version of PowerShell on that machine. The version of that is the PowerShell 5, April preview. It's not the latest one, it's the one that I've got installed because I've connected this machine to a pool server in a cloud. If you want to see details of all that, come to my session tomorrow. I know it's the last one, but I promise you it will be a good one. We will talk about DSC in on premises and in a cloud, and part of that will be also connection to this kind of a story. I will show you all the steps that you need to perform, all the commands that you need to do. And now, because I have a PowerShell 5, I have access to a PowerShell get module, the module that has some commandlets for fetching modules from a Microsoft-owned PowerShellGallery.com repository of PowerShell artifacts. And one of the modules there, resource module, is XGIA. This X is for experimental, because it's still in the work, right? They are still developing. I already installed it just to see how it works. When you run it for the first time, you need to also download and install NuGet. This is the output for installing that version. They are updating it on a regular basis, so if you work with this stuff, it makes sense when you install it to run then later update commandlet to see if you have a newer version with bug fixes and stuff. So let's check the local configuration manager of this remote machine. You can see that's set in a push mode. And what I have on that machine right now is just the 4 default session configurations for a server. Okay? There is nothing that I've created so far. I will use again psedit to bring a remote file into my local PowerShell ISC session so that you can see this demo one script that comes with XGIA resource so that we can go a little bit through that code and see how we define GIA endpoint. If you are familiar already with the DSC, you know that with DSC we got this new keyword called configuration. In configuration, we need to import XGIA or any other module with the DSC resource. They are not exposed already. And then we have 2 resource blocks, one for defining a toolkit and one for defining the endpoint. This part with the toolkit is really important because, as you have seen with the startup script, we needed to do a lot of manual work there to properly configure that startup script. Here, thanks to DSC and the simple syntax, we can create the endpoint and exposed functions very easily. We can use a CSV file or Excel and then export it as a CSV file to define comma-separated values for some of the commandlets and parameters that we want to be exposed, or we can directly write it here. So what we have here for defining a toolkit is that we are specifying a name, parameter, validate set, and validate pattern. So we want to expose get process, get service. We also want to expose stop process, but only when the name of the process that we want to stop is a notepad or calc. If you try to stop something else, it will complain that that's not a proper set of processes that you can target. So it will fail. And we want to expose restart service, but only if service name starts with the letter A. Okay? So we define that validate pattern for it. Then we need to define the endpoint. We give a name for the endpoint. We give a name for a toolkit. We define security descriptor as DDL. This one is for everyone is allowed to connect. But as we know, everyone is allowed to connect. This is for testing purposes. But still, even if everyone is allowed to connect, they can only execute a subset of functions with removed parameters as well. And the XGIA endpoint depends on process XGIA toolkit. So that means we first we'll configure the toolkit, and then we will configure endpoint. If we miss to specify depends on, then there are chances that the configuration manager will try first to create endpoint without having a toolkit, and we will have a problem. So this is how you define dependencies in configurations for DSC. Then they will run that configuration and create a MOV file for a local host, and then start configuration to apply the configuration to a local system. Then we need to wait a little for WinRM service to restart. So let's go back to my interactive session and run this demo. If you look at this verbose messages, you can see that the configuration now tries to create XGA toolkit. It didn't exist, so it created it, then it started, and okay, we have some errors. Let's see. It restarted WinRM very quickly, and we lost a connection. Okay, let me reestablish connection. Okay, that worked. So what we can see here is that we have two new users. One user, I mentioned before, is a specific local admin user created to support our GIA endpoint. And the other one is a user for a scheduling task that will take care of restarting, resetting a password for that account. If I look now at the list of endpoints created on that machine, you can see a new one that we just created using GIA resource called demo 1 EP, EP of endpoint. What happened during the whole process is also that we got this new folder in a program files called GIA that has all the components of creating the GIA endpoint. The startup script is there, the toolkit defines some utilities that it's needed, and also activity folder is there when in a comma separated value file called activities, all the activities will be logged as well in combination with the event logs that will be performed. So let me show you a little bit of important properties of this newly created session configuration. The name is here. As I said, that SDDL created that we used give access to everyone. The startup script is now in program files GIA startup scripts, initialize demo1 EP program script. So we will look at the content of that file to see what happens. And now you see run as user, that we have that local admin user that will be used for executing all those commandlets. The password is secure string, and it's not exposed, as it should be. So let's look at the startup script here. So if we look at this startup script that it's used, we will see that practically it executes behind the scenes initialize toolkit targeting a toolkit called process-toolkit. Why that's the name? Because we specified in our configuration that the name is a process. If we use something else, then we will here see food-toolkit, okay? So let's look at the process-toolkit module and what's inside. You can see here it's a pretty long script. It's more than 300 lines. That's the public content. If you remember from the startup scripts when I worked on it, when I worked on that module and stuff, this is the module that creates all the functions that you can use. So you can see here it's auto-generated, and we specified get process, right? Then stop process. get service, restart service. Those four we want. This is what we specified in our configuration. And thanks to that, if you remember, it was really easy to just write a few lines of code what we want exposed. This is created for us. Amazing stuff, right? 300 lines of code, just like that. And we just said, I want get process. I want stop process only to stop calc and notepad. No problem. It's created. All the parameters that I don't need are removed, and all those command proxies are created for me. So let's test it. Let's see how it works when I connect to this endpoint as a non-admin user. So as you can see here, now when I use new PS session, I will specify that the name of the configuration that I want to use is demo1 EP. Okay. Need to wait a little for this session. It's always frustrating when you wait for this remoting commands. You never know if you will get error or access. Hopefully it will work. Yeah, we have that. Let's check. You see, we are connected to a demo1 EP. Let's create the interactive session and see what we can use. So you see here, there is a bunch of commands exposed to us that we can use. Some of them are coming just because of that definition of Jia, that creations of Jia, creators of Jia think that are needed, and they will provide a great user experience. It's like get help, get history, get module. And then we have some that are coming from a safe proxy module. That's also something that it's created by Jia. We didn't work with that at all. And then we have those four that are coming from a process toolkit module. This is how we define the configuration. So if I run, for example, who am I, just to show you how it looks like, you will see that I'm connected as a demo non-admin user. But I will execute everything as a run as user, which in this case is a local admin account, post demo 3, JSA demo 1 EP. That's a local admin on my Azure VM. This is the result of my configuration, right? Get process, get service, restart service, and stop process. Only those four. Everything else that it's part of there, it's a part of default configuration of Jia. So let's try to restart Bits service. As you can see, as you expect, I get error because Bits does not match the pattern of regex. It doesn't start with the letter A. What will happen if I want, let's look at the stop process. So what will happen if I try to stop process? It will say, very dangerous action, by the way, it will restart your machine if you try it without this constraint. It says it doesn't belong to a set calc and notepad. If you, for example, had a process calc or notepad, then it will work if you try to stop it. But for this one, it will fail. There's one thing that I want to show you, always test, always test. I know this is a demo, but still, it should be tested better, if you ask me. I will show you what happens if I try to run stop process without specifying name parameter. Look at this. It asked me interactively for ID. I thought that I removed ID parameter, but it asked me for ID. and see what I can do now. I'm a non-admin, right? I can stop this. Get process works, right? It's exposed. Now I have access to ID for this dangerous process, dangerous if I close it. I can rerun stop process now, supply the ID of the LSASS, and restart remote machine. Always test. Let's fix the problem. And I will show you where the problem is, why this happens. So first I need to stop this. Let's connect as an admin to remote machine interactively. And you see here we have two scripts. So I will go again to that module for defining stuff. And I will show you stop process. So here is a problem. We removed the ID parameter, but we didn't remove the setting that says default parameter set is ID. Because in that parameter set, ID parameter is mandatory. I'm asked for it. So if we want to fix a problem, we need to change this name to name, right? That way, let me close it, save it. That way, everything will work perfectly. I need to reconnect now as a non-admin because that initialization and everything is done during the connection, initial connection. And now when I get this session, if I try to run stop process without specifying anything, I should be asked for a name parameter. This is what I expect. So always, always test, 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 right? Don't think upfront that you constrain everything properly. So now I'm asked for a name, and if I say, okay, I want to close this one, I can be pretty sure that will not work, and I will get the same expected error message. Another important part of all this is logging. We want to get information about who accessed that endpoint and what commands were executed during that connection. So let's establish a new interactive session and check the content of the CSV file for activity logs. You can see here that all my connections during my preparation for this and also during this session are logged here. The important part here to know is a run space ID. Why? Because I can do correlation between this log and information from event logs and get information about when someone connected, what key executed, and all that stuff. So I will set a start date to yesterday and connect to Microsoft Windows PowerShell operational log to look for all events that have a stop process as a part of a message. You can see that I have lots of them. And here, you see that it's logged that I'm executed stop process as this user, but I was connected as a non-admin. So if someone tried to break in to do something malicious, you will have all those things logged in event log. And then you can here get a run space ID and make a connection to that CSV file and get information about other stuff that you want and need. Great stuff, right? Let me show you one last thing. How to get what happens really when someone connects, what kind of credentials go into memory, and if you have a user who has a local admin rights and he uses a hacker tool called Mimikatz, what kind of information that guy will get. So I will download from a GitHub, from a PowerSploit collection of commandlets created by two extremely well PowerShell security guys, Chris Campbell and Matt Graber. But this particular commandlet function is created by Joseph Bialik, the guy who works for Microsoft, which is really interesting. And this allows me to run Mimikatz completely remotely in a memory without touching a disk. I'm executing everything from my local laptop here on an Azure VM machine. I will fetch credentials from memory. Isn't that frightening? I mean, seriously frightening? All of that thanks that I'm connected as a local admin on that machine. If I didn't have local admin rights on that machine, I could not perform this. So be aware, when you have a user in your environment as a local admin rights, and you think that they are nice guys, maybe they are not. And they will have access to the same tool, and they can fetch your credentials. Don't ever connect with your domain admin account to uncontrolled desktop machine in your environment. Seriously. So let's do the dump over credentials. Check the content of it. You see there is a lot of things here. We connected as a non-admin user, right? Let's search for a non-admin. Non-admin is not there. The guy who connected to an endpoint is not exposed. What we have exposed here is a run as account. This is the account. See the NTLM hash? For hackers, that's enough to become that guy. The good thing is that that guy is a local admin. He has only local admin rights. All this is performed by the guy who already owns this machine as a local admin. What he gained with all these actions? Nothing. He's already owner of that machine, right? But the user who connected is protected in this way because his credentials are not in memory. Run as credentials are in memory. The best thing here, from a defense perspective, is that all these actions are logged in event logs. So if you search for a Mimikatz, you will see that you will get all the information, and you can track that and be aware that the Mimikatz is present on that machine, and that machine is exposed, breached, controlled by someone else. Thank you for your time. Enjoy the conference. If you have some additional questions, you can ask me in a hall. I will be available till the end of the conference. Thank you.